If not, let's move to the some industry viewpoint. We have several speakers. Christophe Godin.
Thank you. I'm going to, for this presentation, to open a little bit again the box of the adaptive design, but more in the situation of phase three that we touched a little bit earlier. The point is the following. Based on the current situation with morbid mortality trial in ACS and stroke, there is a lot of needs which are even increasing, and we are all talking about this morning. We know that we probably need to study more than one dose in a pivotal trial. This is an increasing demand from health authorities. We have also an event rate which is lower than it was before, and we are looking at hard endpoints. This is in a context where most of the studies are targeting about 20% relative risk reduction. This is the classical target that we see in most studies. And the question which is raised is, how can we follow this situation and how can we fund the studies when we are facing an increasing demand that can increase the sample size? What I'm going to present here is obviously related to some internal experience, but it's not exclusive or exhaustive of this experience. When we are facing this type of situation, one of the things that we want to envisage is how to reduce the sample size so that it is an acceptable level for funding. One is potentially increasing the target relative risk reduction. And I appreciate the comment of Michael Gibson this morning that for commercial futility, we may not want necessarily to target a relative risk reduction of 20%. The second aspect is to select potentially higher risk subpopulation or selecting population at the appropriate time when the risk is the highest. We just heard that a few minutes ago. And the third possibility that we touched a little bit this morning is the adaptive design. So here is an example of an adaptive design that could be considered for a phase three trial, where we have a study population studied with more than one dose of tested drug versus a control group, and with an interim analysis following which there will be a decision to continue only on one of the two doses until the study end, to look at the primary endpoint. And this presentation here is related to a superiority efficacy trial. The advantage of such a design in terms of sample size is that we may be able to end with a trial which size is the size of one of the doses until the interim analysis plus the size of the two arms which continue until the end of the study, which is potentially a reduction in sample size of about 25%. When we are talking about studies of 10 to 15,000 patients, this is not something negligible. So in terms of consideration for industry, of course, when we want to do that, we want to make sure that this is something that can be approved at the end by health authorities. Otherwise, there would be a clear futility in doing this. And we have three references that we need to take into account. One is the draft guidance for industry that has been issued by the FDA in 2010. But certainly, and anyway, we have this type of consultation, the consultation with the FDA end of phase two and the consultation, scientific advice with EMA are considerable aspects before running such a trial. We are under the understanding that there might be some opening on the FDA side to possibly merge the efficacy results of two doses if they show similar efficacy also in phase two. We also understand that this aspect may be challenged, at least I remember an advisory committee where there was a challenge on this possibility. Nevertheless, the feedback that we have from EMA on this aspect is that anyway, the to-be-marketed dose should show significance in the primary efficacy analysis. So this is basically this conservative approach that we need to take into account. We talked about that this morning. There are some additional considerations that are of interest. The fact that at the time of a pivotal trial, we are able not only to have one dose, but also another dose that could be potentially more useful for a subgroup of patients, or more appropriate for a subgroup of patients. We also have to keep in mind, and that's introducing the next slide, the fact that when a study is performed to compare a a new drug versus a comparator group, this study is not powered to look at the dose between each other. It's usually not the situation that happens, and that induces a number of things that we need to take into account, which are described on this slide. I try to summarize here the key points to consider and negotiate up front with health authorities when we are addressing an adaptive design. One is the timing of interim analysis, and for obvious reasons, the later it is, probably the more informative is this interim analysis. On the other hand, if it is too late, there is no reason to think about an adaptive design. So we need to find the appropriate time for doing it so that we have an observation which is robust enough so that a decision is made, but not too late so that the impact on sample size would be almost negligible. The other point is obviously the choice of the interim endpoint. And here a consideration that we could have is that it is not necessarily the primary efficacy endpoint that could be looked at, but the benefits-risk endpoint. Again, we are reaching some considerations that we talked about this morning. There are two key aspects, and they're actually very well described in the guidelines, that we need to take into account. It's the prevention of bias. One is the statistical bias prevention. I am not a statistician myself, but I think there are some good knowledge and publication regarding how to preserve a type 1 error with some recognized approach with convincing simulation. Clearly, this is something that has to be negotiated upfront with health authorities, but where we can, I think, reach an agreement. The other aspect is operational bias. From my perspective, this type of consideration can only apply to a double-blind study in order to avoid that there is only knowledge of study results at an interim point that could impact validity of the study. And from this perspective, either an independent statistical committee or a DMC should be involved in this process. Then the process can go, and we have to take into account during the study the fact that the robustness of the interim observation depends on how many events can be looked at this time. We are always training to make sure that the event rate that we can observe in a study during the conduct of a study is aligned with the assumptions of the study. That's certainly something important to consider and to have resolved at the time of the interim analysis. And then we can envisage that there will be a selection of the dose to be continued until the end of the study. This is at least one approach which is worth looking at. I can only conclude with the help of some people who are apparently strongly supportive of being adaptative, like Charles Darwin and Stephen Hawking. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Provocative.